I felt happy because I wanted to introduce you to the world of Zen. And then I was thinking how to introduce you to Zen. The best way was silence. But in silence, nothing is said. And many times I have this dilemma, because really I have nothing to talk about. There's nothing to be said, because the truth cannot be said. But in some mysterious way, the truth also comes through the words, if the source is silence. Normally the words come from the mind, which is noise. Then there is always misunderstanding, confusion, comparison. But if you have an open heart, an open mind, and you hear the truth, then there is nothing to compare, nothing to understand. It just sinks in and fills you. And that's how meditation is. And these next 2 weeks, you should really focus on you. Forget all the things that you are so busy with in your life that is giving you so much headache, decisions, doing. See if you can just consciously give this to yourself, where you want to come back to yourself, feel yourself, be yourself. You have a break from who you think you are, just to be, just to rest. I call this retreat Sand, Fire, Sand, Snow, or Sand, Snow, and Sand, Fire. Because Sand goes beyond the opposites. It's neither hot nor cold. Or it's both and more. And you have to go beyond all opposites to find the balance, that still point, that clarity in you. In Zen, they always have said, it's absolutely necessary to have a master. Because Zen is not the religion, it's not the teaching as such. So how can you catch it then? You have to catch it from an alive source. You only get warm by being by the flame. So first necessary thing is to have a master. The second, to meditate, to go deep in yourself, to find out what the master is talking about. Because it's not a belief, it's an experience. One has to experience it for oneself. And as that experience is happening, is unfolding, is maturing, the more you will understand the Master, the more you will understand yourself. So now we have the perfect place, this oasis of silence. Where you can just come back to yourself. It must be one of the best places, maybe the best place in the whole world, if you are conscious enough to see it. Nothing disturbs you, and there is only nature around, which is totally quiet. And not only that, but it's full moon tonight. Last retreat we finished on full moon. Now we start at full moon. It seems like I never get away from this full moon, which is fine for me. Because full moon is beautiful. I hope you saw the full moon yesterday. And when the clouds goes, maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow, who knows, you should use the opportunity to have a walk in the full moon, in this quiet place that you are. In fact, any time now in this retreat, you should use more also to have a walk, meditative walk, because now it's much easier, because it's less snow. Yes, it's more icy, I have seen, but that is perfect also. I couldn't have made it better. Because then you have to come more down in your feet. You have to get out of your head. Otherwise you will fall. And when I saw her, I was thinking, this is perfect. Because you have to become more grounded. You have to sink down. Down in your belly, in your hara, in your legs. Feel the contact with the ground. Otherwise, modern man is so top heavy. That is amazing, he doesn't fall over all the time. With those big heads, pumpkin heads. In Brazil I had one pumpkin man, and he saw that he wanted to get rid of the pumpkin head. But then, 1 week later, I was going to get sannyas, and in that time, the pumpkin came back. He escaped. But that means more falling. So now, shrink the pumpkin head, sink down in your heart, in your belly, in your legs, and it's a great exercise to walk Vipassana style now on the ice. You should try just to have balance from one leg to the other. It becomes almost like Tai Chi. Very relaxed in the upper body and very conscious in your legs, in your feet, with the relaxed breath. Just that is a beautiful meditation. Everything is available always, so many different things. It's just that you are so busy. So I just remind you of all these simple things that you can get a lot out of now. Start enjoying the silence, walking, the moon, the darkness, whatever it is. Eating, sleeping, meditating. Just be focused in what you are doing. That's what Zen is all about, to bring you back to your center, back to your Buddha nature, back to your consciousness. There was a great master called Bodhidharma who was the beginning of Zen, they say. He knew about the teaching of the Buddha. In fact, he was a disciple of the Buddhist teaching. He was an Indian prince. This was maybe 500-600 years after Buddha had been there. And he must have been very much like Buddha himself, because he was a prince and his father was a big emperor. But it didn't satisfy him, this riches, the image, the power, that have just come without doing anything. And he was wondering, because he was very intelligent, that anyway, I will die. What's the point of all this? So he asked his father, "You have everything, you say, but can you give me that that frees me from death, that gives me peace?" And the father said, "No." And he said, "Then I will leave this. That's what I want to find." And the story goes that he got initiated by a woman mystic, an enlightened woman, which also shows that he was very rebellious. Because first, it's not many compared to the men, the women mystics. And in India, they were not that accepted. They were always on the outside. But he must have had a magical meeting. And if you look into the eyes, and if you are a seeker to someone who is enlightened, you will get drawn in. And when he got self-realized, that woman was the one who said he should go to China. And of course, you listen to your master. Anyway, when you're enlightened, you have let go of everything else anyway, so it doesn't matter where you are. And she must have seen that he was ready for the journey. And this is 1500 years ago. You can imagine how it would be to go from India to China. And they said 3 years it took. 3 years walking over the Himalayas, through whole India and over the Himalayas, over the Tibetan plateau, and then coming to China. Then in those 3-4 years, he became like, almost like an animal himself. You have to survive. And in China, he was known as the barbarian, because he looked so wild, so unruly. But they were very attracted to him. And they have heard about the Buddhist teaching hundreds of years before, which they loved, but they didn't have any enlightened master. So when Bodhidharma came, they were very thirsty. And they already was following the teaching and the meditations and reading the sutras. But here was somebody who came alive. But he was definitely not civilized anymore. And it's very difficult to understand the teachings of such a master if you are not somewhat evolved on your inner planes. That's why the West never could understand Zen, because it sounds totally crazy. Because all these sayings is to get you beyond the mind. I will read you something. The story goes, when he came to China, there was an emperor who was a great Buddhist who had built a lot of temples and schools and gotten all the sutras and the teaching of the Buddha translated into Chinese. His name was Wu, and he met him when he came over the border. Emperor Wu asked Bodhidharma, "What is the first principle of the holy teaching?" Bodhidharma said, "Emptiness, no holiness." The emperor then asked, "Who is standing here before me saying this?" "No knowing," said Bodhidharma. The emperor did not grasp anything of his meaning. Thereupon, Bodhidharma crossed the river and went to the land of Wei. The emperor later spoke of this to Shiko, who said, "Do you in fact know who this person is? Who this was?" The emperor said, "This is the Bodhisattva, the bearer of the Buddha's heart seal." The emperor was so full of regret and wanted to send for Bodhidharma. But Shiku said, "It's no good sending a messenger to fetch him back. Even if all the people of your country went, he would not turn back." It's very easy to miss a Buddha. That is the whole teaching. Because you are so occupied in the mind. And these Zen people want to catch you in the moment, to bring you back to the present. Emperor Wu asked Bodhidharma, "What is the first principle of the holy teaching?" No, he have heard about all the so-called holy teaching of the Buddha, of the scriptures. So he is behaving very properly and asked this wild man, "What is the first principle of the holy teachings? What is the most important?" And Bodhidharma said, "Emptiness, no holiness." No, he destroyed his whole holy thing, all the scriptures and everything, just in one cut. He must be in shock. He wanted to hear some holy teaching, some holy words. And all he gets is emptiness, no holiness. The essence of Buddha's teaching is emptiness, nirvana. How can there be any holiness or unholiness in emptiness? Impossible. Emptiness is emptiness. Consciousness is consciousness. All holiness or unholiness, right and wrong, belongs to the mind. But this is shocking if you don't have that experience, inner experience, where you have gone beyond the mind. If you're still a slave of the mind, it's shocking. And that is what truth is always shocking. It will stir you up. You have to leave the known. You have to go in to an area which you are totally fresh, unburdened, new. Bodhidharma said, "Emptiness, no holiness." Then the emperor said, "Who is standing here before me?" No, he got a little upset. I have been with masters, even with Osho, and people asked, "And who are you?" I have been with Papaji and people said, "And who are you then?" Totally arrogant. "Yes, I am so and so, so you have to also be so and so. Who are you? How can you say this?" It's totally ignorance. It shows that you are totally locked in your ego. You have no idea what is beyond. Like Jesus is saying, "Come follow me." For the normal mind who is locked in his ego, in his mind, it sounds like the biggest egoist. Come follow me for what? Who are you? But if you are a meditator, if you are a seeker, if you are a disciple, then only you understand. But it seems like this Bodhidharma, he didn't give a shit. He was totally wild. And of course, been walking over the Himalayas for 3 years. He had no manners anymore. So if you are not natural, if you are not connected with that which is beyond any society and rules, you cannot connect to a man of truth is impossible. Because all your habits will be in the way. All that you have learned, all your ideas, how to be, how to behave, what to say, what to think, all that has to go. This is the dilemma for an enlightened person. How to transfer it? Because it can help, but it can also shock. You can also get crucified for it. Then the emperor said, "Who is standing before me?" "No knowing," Bodhidharma said. He didn't even say, "not knowing." Because I am not knowing, I don't know. No, he didn't even say, "I." He just said, "no knowing." There's nobody there. I don't know. I'm just space. I'm just awareness. How can you put a name on consciousness, on awareness? It made even more less sense for the emperor. The emperor did not grasp his meaning. Of course he didn't grasp it, but at least he got choked up, which can be a great help for a beginning of something new. And they said that this emperor, he really got it. He really became a seeker, a meditator, a man of wisdom. Thereupon, Bodhidharma crossed the river and went to the land of Wei. No, he just left his kingdom. Because this man, he is not ready to take it. And Bodhidharma has no interest to stay there and teach in the court of the emperor. The emperor later spoke of this to Shiko. Shiko was another master who said, "Do you in fact know who this person is?" This was the Bodhisattva, the bearer of the Buddha's heart seat, a living Buddha, the bearer of the heart seal. He has the heart of the Buddha, he has the truth. He was the real deal. This is the guy that we have heard about. It was this guy. The emperor was full of regret and wanted to send for Bodhidharma. But Shiku said, "It's no good sending a messenger to fetch him back. Even if all the people in your whole kingdom went, he would not turn back." That is another hint that an enlightened one, he doesn't care. He doesn't care what you think about him, if it's good or if it's bad. And if he's not interested, he's not interested. And it's very easy to miss the chance. No, he had the chance, but he wasn't ready to get it. No, you cannot bring it him back and start new, no. No, the emperor himself has to face, if he really wants it, if he really wants to understand the teaching of the Buddha, then maybe it's time to leave the whole kingdom himself, just like Bodhidharma did, which is also a sign that every seeker has to leave everything. You have to leave everything of the known behind. You have to become a Bodhidharma, It doesn't mean that you have to leave all the physical things, but all your attachments, all your ideas, all your identification. All that has to go. You can live and do and work whatever you want, but don't be identified with it. Be vaster, be bigger. No, the story goes that this Bodhidharma, he went to a holy mountain, sacred mountain in China, where they had a big monastery. That was the Shaolin Monastery, which they say was the beginning of all martial arts. But he was, even for them, he was too crazy, this guy. Almost like an animal. They didn't allow him there. So he went up in a cave and he sat there for 9 years. The 9 years he sat there. And during that time, of course, more and more monks, seekers, people from the villages, they came because you feel that something is happening. They were attracted. And he had told himself that I'm not going to turn around before I see somebody who is worthy, who is ready. He wasn't into the masses. Just one or two disciples should be enough. And that's how really a real master is. He's not interested in the masses. The masses never understands the truth. It's individual. It's an individual journey. So many people came and say, please teach me. And he wouldn't turn around. And sometimes it must have been pretty crowded in this cave because the energy is very strong if you are such a man as Bodhidharma. And one time he, of course, falling so much asleep, sitting there, he got so mad that he cut off his eyebrows, his eyelids, and threw them outside. And they say that was the first tea plant that grew out of his eyelids. Because tea keeps you awake. So it's a nice story because tea gives you a kick. And that is Bodhidharma's eyelids. They were so full of energy, awareness, that you, when you drink a good cup of chai, you go like this, like, ah. And that I can vote for. That it works in a little way. Of course, just in the beginning, because some people are so sleepy, even a cup of tea is too much for them. That is just Bodhidharma's eyelids. What to say about his heart? You eat that, you will never sleep again. So then at last, one seeker came and he said, you turn around now, I'm ready. And Bodhidharma said, another guy. And then he cut his hand off and threw it in front of Bodhidharma. No, my head is the next. If you don't turn around, my head will be the next. Then Bodhidharma turned around and said, ah, no, you came now. No need to cut off your head. Let's put some bandage on. No, I can move out of here. No, I have somebody who is ready. That is another sign how a disciple should be. Total. Then the master is happy. No, he can even go out of his meditation. No. Come on, let's go. Take a walk in the fields. No, you are ready. You don't care. No, they also invited him back to Shaolin Monastery. And he became a great master there. In fact, he started, up till then, the Shaolin Monastery only had been Buddhist meditations, Vipassana, which many of you know, it can go easily like that. Even all Bodhidharma, it goes like that. Even now, sitting here in satsang, I see somebody like that. That's the habit. You're not used to being awake. So when you start meditating, and especially silent meditation, then you have to go through that. Like that. That's why they have this hit you on the head, just hop. And that is great. Many people had satoris by hitting on the head just like that. Because to sleep is very innocent. Then you also, there's no ego there when you sleep. You're just gone, but you are not aware. So meditation should be like you are totally relaxed, like sleeping, and totally present. It's that meeting of the opposites. So no, this Bodhidharma, he had learned from his traveling and all his wild living, and by just sitting there year in, year out, he must have been getting totally out of shape, the poor guy. And that's like any Buddhist meditator or old yogi situation. The body needs to move a little bit. So then he started giving the monks new meditations. How to stretch, how to move, how to be flexible. And all the different kung fu styles and tai chi started there. Because this Bodhidharma, he had been observing, of course, the animals when he was traveling, walking for years. So he knew the tigers, the monkeys, the eagles, the snakes. And that's how, they say, it became different styles. And different humans have different sides. So you can move like a snake with like no bones in your body, and your anasi, your kundalini, wakes up very quickly, very fluid. Or you can move more like a tiger. It's very powerful. So all these different anasi, you can wake up by feeling the animal's side. And you have been all the different animals in your past, so it will be there, the imprint. So he combined moving and breathing into the traditional sitting meditation, breathing meditation. Which I'm all for, because that is my understanding too. And I have been there in old China in the past. So I remember that also. And that's why I'm teaching you these things also, that you shouldn't, too much of anything is no good. It should be balanced. And meditation works, is much easier to sit after you move. Too much moving, no good. And the more aware you become, that moving can become very, very little. That breathing can be very, very little, that you wake up your anasi. In the beginning, a lot of movement. Like when you are young, you have to move a lot. As you get more conscious, you get more present. Then just little movements and the same outcome. That is the whole thing behind qi, energy, subtle energies. When you see and hear the stories of the old masters, martial arts masters, it's not much movement, but they are so present. And they are full of energy. They are full of qi. Because they conserve it. They don't spill it out. There is no doing. There is no show off. They are present in themselves. Then you become a pool of energy. Then whatever you put that into, if that is making a beautiful garden, or if it's martial arts, or if it's dancing, or if it's painting, or if it's music, it becomes more beautiful. Because you have, it comes from your own inner source. It's not a doing, it's more an overflowing. So this Bodhidharma, he created a whole new site, which hadn't been there before, because the monks should be very peaceful, very still. Now he opened up something totally new, which became very popular. And when this tradition of Zen, which is much more free-spirited than the old Buddhist, came to Japan, which took many hundred years before that happened, it became even more polished, more beautiful, more direct. Because the Japanese has always been amazing in beauty, in artistry, in creativity. And they brought meditation into gardening, food making, painting, flower arranging, martial arts, building, anything. The West never understood that, and it came to Japan, and this is like a spiritual thing. And instead of going to the church, they go and fight with two sticks or shoot bow and arrow. But it's just the narrow mind of the Western mind that doesn't see the presence there. Because to be religious, spiritual, is to be conscious, aware in the moment. It's not about reading the scriptures or the Bible or the Buddha sutras. It is an inner awareness. It's an aliveness. But if you are not in contact with it, you cannot see it. So Zen is a totally individual path. You have to do it. And the only way to do it is to have somebody who can remind you that you have it. That's why they are not so much interested in studying the scriptures. They know it has to be alive. This Shaolin temple that Bodhidharma started, it's still there. Maybe it's the most, one of the most famous temples in the whole world, especially after Kung Fu became so popular. So they have had people there for 1,500 years. Many times it had been destroyed by different reasons, because there's been so much violence in China and so many emperors. And sometimes these monks that were there, they were maybe supporting one emperor, and then another came and destroyed it. But that was also one of the ways it got shared with the world. First in China, because when they destroyed it, all these monks that they didn't kill, they escaped. And in that way, it got spread all over China. Now, of course, it's much more physical, because even there they have forgotten. And especially in the West, that's what people think about. It's not the inner energy, the subtle energy, it's the movement, it's what you see. So it's very hard now to find a proper sifu, a proper teacher, who has that inner. Everything has been just physical. Like that. No, I almost went back to China. But this is like that here. Very quiet, very peaceful. And another thing, no bandits around. So you can go safe home or even meditate safely. So when you are here now, experiment with that. Whatever way, be more conscious. Eating, walking, sitting. Whatever you do, brushing your teeth. Anything can be a meditation, and that's how it should be. Not like you're doing meditation 1 hour, but you have a meditativeness in you that gets into everything you do. But you have to invite it, you have to feel it, you have to live it, you have to try it. You have to experience it. I remember more to that story with the emperor and Bodhidharma also now. It must have happened before he asked him these questions when they first met. Then this emperor, he had built so many schools and temples and did so much for the Buddhist teaching. And he told Bodhidharma, "What is my merit?" He asked him, "What do I gain of this? What is my merit? I have done so much. I have built so many temples and schools and translated so many of the Buddhist teachings. What do I gain from all this? What is my merit?" And Bodhidharma said, "You will go to hell." That is the thing, if you are too truthful, then nobody understands you. You really have to be, that's my experience also, you can only tell the truth if people are really in tune, really devoted, really understanding, very steady, that they themselves have left the identification way behind. Otherwise, the truth can be too harsh. Of course, there's many different ways to say a thing. So Bodhidharma, he is very raw. But this emperor, he got it. He got transformed. That is later on, through more stories, he became a wise man, and most probably that's why we hear about these stories. Because who else, how could we hear these stories from Bodhidharma 1,500 years ago, if it hadn't been somebody like the emperor who got it out? It had to be somebody that he just met in the bushes in the jungle. They wouldn't have told that. But he could be nicer, but what to do? People are different. And the meaning is that you cannot think that you gain something in heaven, or you are more a religious person, more a Buddhist, more a Christian, just because you build a hospital like the Christians do, or a school, or a temple, or a church, or donate something to the poor Red Cross or something. It doesn't help anybody. You will go to hell, he said. Because you are already in hell, you are already disillusioned. You don't see the truth. So for somebody like Bodhidharma, it's either or. Either you're in hell or you're in heaven. So that's what he's meaning. It's no different. Either you are asleep or you are awake. And when you so-called do all these good things, just because you're going to be recognized, or he's such a great emperor, he's such a religious person, or that you get the good afterlife, is totally nonsense. You will end up in hell. You're already in hell. You can't see. The only merit, the only gain you can do is to come back to yourself. And any Bodhidharma is there to turn your focus back to the source. It's never helped anybody. You can be an emperor, you can be so well known in the world, you can build 10,000 temples, but nothing will help you. You are as stupid as ever. You are living in hell. But it's a shock. especially for an emperor. But he must have been a seeker, otherwise he wouldn't be there. And they say it did help. It started something to look deeper than what he knew, than what he thought he was, to really start finding out, who am I? But if he hadn't met somebody like Bodhidharma, he would never get it straight, because people need shocks in one way or the other. To stop, to think, to contemplate, to meditate, to come back. Because the habit is so ancient that again and again you get lost in the so-called normal daily life. And it doesn't matter what you do, if you build temples or hospitals or drive a taxi, it doesn't matter. You have to come back, you have to stop, you have to go deeper, beyond your ideas of who you are. And you are not here to gain anything, because you have already everything that is needed. Stop and see. Stop and be. That is the miracle, to get somebody to stop and see, so they can be, so they can realize their own Buddha nature. Aum Shanti. It's pretty cozy here now. Just settle in now and enjoy, no? If you don't know already, then you are home. Just relax, okay? Nowhere to go. Aum Shanti. You can be emperor of the whole world and have nothing. That's why it's more valuable to have one friend like Bodhidharma than to have the whole kingdom. And how crazy it is that there's something so powerful in people, something so real, that they can leave everything because of that.